I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. As lifelong Disney fans, the work of countless talented Disney creatives have shaped our lives.
Now, as the Disney catalog expands, we're taking a journey through film and television to discover if that spark that shaped us as children lives on in adulthood.
Does your favorite Disney media still cast that same spell? Join us as we find out. We are
Rewatching the Magic. Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
Breathe in that fresh air of a new country, I guess.
Yeah, we are recording this in the early throes, the first 24 hours.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, before we get into what we're our main feature here, WandaVision just dropped a few days ago as we are recording this. The first two episodes have released. Kiki, what are your thoughts of this first endeavor of the Marvel Movie Studios doing a TV show?
I still have, and no spoilers, by the way, if anybody's freaking out, no spoilers. We'll do this very generically. I still don't know exactly what this is, but I know that I am 100% here for whatever it is. This is so great. I loved every second of it. I am a big fan of classic sitcoms. Mm-hmm. Especially the kind of Dick Van Dyke Bewitched kind of thing, which they do in the first two episodes.
Yeah.
Their set in the first episode is so close to the original layout of the Dick Van Dyke set that I'm kind of surprised Disney isn't getting sued by somebody.
I heard that Dick Van Dyke was
a consultant.
A consultant on this. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they got him over to the 33 Club or whatever, and like gave him a good meal and talked to him for a while. He said he didn't know what the MCU was, but he's also like what 93 now, so I think we'll give him a pass. Dick Van Dyke is amazing and can do no wrong, so I don't
Disney
really
legend Dick Van Dyke. Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, I don't know. What did you think of it?
I like the homages to the classic sitcoms of the 50s and the 60s. The more interesting thing for me is the bigger picture, the more scarier moments of the show, I guess you can call it that. The more what the H is going on here. The questions that are brought up, you know, the moments that are in color versus the moments that are black and white.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite parts of the two episodes that we've seen is the parody commercials.
Yeah. This show has commercials. Are a very nice touch.
Yeah. The fact that they actually added in parody commercials for these shows, and these are also hints at what might come and what has come.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, if you've seen the other movies, these are references to the other movies.
Yeah. Even hints of what's to come, yeah.
As they say, everything's connected.
Yeah, you can't really look away from this. If you're going to put it on, you know, they're only like, what, half-hour episodes or whatever.
At least these first two are.
Yeah, it's not a big-time investment at this point. So if you haven't watched it yet and you're going to watch it, I would do it where you're not going to be distracted. You know, put it on and focus on the screen. This is not something to, like, listen to while you're doing the dishes or whatever. Because the visuals are very, they can be subtle, but I think there's a lot kind of in the background that might be easy to miss on a first watch. I've watched the first two episodes twice. I did an initial watch and then I rewatched them about 24 hours later. And I caught things on my second viewing I did not see on my first. So, you know, it's that kind of show. It's a show that really rewards paying attention to.
Yeah. I know that most people's exposure to Paul Bettany has been these movies, but if you followed his career, you'll see that he is a great comedic actor, and he really gets to show those chops in these two episodes.
I still to this day call him Naked Chaucer. Because he was Chaucer in A Knight's Tale, and he is naked the first time you see him. So my friends group, when we first saw that movie, somebody just started talking about Naked Chaucer. You know, I don't know who Naked Chaucer is, but he's really hot. We, you know, and Naked Chaucer became a joke among my friends group. And then later he showed up in the Marvel movies, and somebody was like, why does that guy look so familiar? And then somebody went, oh, wait, it's Naked Chaucer. And then we were really, so even when he's playing Vision, I can't help but think of him as Naked Chaucer. And he is, that was a comedic role. I mean, and it was the first thing I ever saw him in. And so that's, I've always thought about him as a comedic actor, and was rather shocked when he did the Marvel films and was so good at kind of the other end of that.
He was good at doing the sass as Jarvis, though.
Oh yeah, he's got a great voice for that. It's just there's something in his voice naturally that I think is just given to that sort of dry British sarcasm.
And, you know, for someone who is not as inexperienced as an actor, Elizabeth Olsen did a great job.
I was very shocked by her performance. I was expecting her to be the weak link. I knew that Paul Bettany could do great things. I was not expecting the same out of Elizabeth Olsen. But she nails it. She nails that 50s, 60s, you know, over-exaggerated comedic TV wife.
Mm.
She's got a little bit of that Mary Tyler Moore. She's got
a little bit of Lucille Ball in there.
Yeah, she's got the best kind of combination of a lot of the leading women of the time. And she really sells that she believes in the world she's in.
Mm.
Which is very good, because it's such a heightened reality, even for a Marvel project.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love it. I would recommend it. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't wait to see where this goes and how this fits into the other movies. And supposedly these are going to be fitting into some of the other movies as we get there. And, you know, we'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
And the good first attempt from the Marvel movie studio to do a show. And we'll see more from more episodes of WandaVision and Falcon, Winter Soldier, and Loki, and all of the other shows that are coming before the end of the year.
Yeah, I'm hoping this is going to be a good year for Marvel on the smaller screen.
Yeah, since we unfortunately haven't gotten anything on the big screen in the last year.
Yeah, well, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. And let's move on to our second talking point. The Muppet Show is coming to Disney+. All five seasons.
Yes, it is time to play the music. It is time to light the lights. We are finally getting the original Muppet Show on Disney+, and I could not be happier.
We've talked about this before, that there's a lot of legal red tape surrounding this show, not only involving the celebrity appearances, but the songs themselves. There's a lot of licensed songs that the Muppet Show used, and the fact that they had to go and get every single one of them cleared for this, I am surprised that they went through the hassle.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't read for sure if it's going to be completely unedited.
Mm.
So there may still be. We have to wait, I think, to say for sure, because none of the articles I've read have said anything about if it's going to be the full, complete original airings.
And when Disney released these the show on DVD about a decade ago, they only did the first three seasons, and a lot of that was because of the licensing issues.
Some of the licensing issues have weirdly cleared up since that. Things like having to license the Star Wars characters for the Star Wars episode of The Muppet Show.
Yeah.
They don't have to go through a separate company now to do that.
Also, buying Fox means they now own a couple of more songs.
Yeah, they did, I think, buy a lot of music properties in that deal as well. So, and I think they've also acquired a couple other music libraries between the time they released the DVDs and now. So, it is possible that they actually just already owned a large chunk of what was in there.
Worst case scenario, it would be like that final DVD release of MST3K where it was just the in-between parts. Which, if it is, it will be sad, but at least it's something.
Yeah, I'm really, really hoping that the behemoth that is Disney kind of works in our favor in this one, and that they've been able to throw their weight around enough to get the entire thing put on, because some of those things you couldn't really see in syndication, and there's some of it that I've only seen because some people had like really old copies that they recorded with early home recording equipment.
Yeah, a lot of the Muppet Show actually ended up being edited for syndication because these were 1-hour shows without commercials.
Yeah, and sometimes the British version, because it was filmed in England, so sometimes the shows that aired in England and other parts of Europe were different than what got brought over to America, even.
Yeah. Not just for commercials, but just for content in general.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what version we get. It's February 19th, I believe, that we'll finally have access to it.
Also, the same month, or at least a week after, I believe, the release of Jim Henson's Dinosaurs to Disney+.
Yes, I'm very much looking forward to that.
A lot of Jim Henson coming to Disney+.
Yeah, I'm very, very pleased with both of those announcements. But I don't think any of us realistically thought we'd see The Muppet Show for a while.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get more. Hopefully we'll get like Muppets Tonight within the next year, or any of the other Muppet TV specials that came during that time. Like,
yeah.
Hey Cinderella or The Frog Prince or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I always want more Muppets and Henson in general. So whatever Disney can give us, I am absolutely going to be there for.
Yep. So let's move on to our main feature, 1959's Sleeping Beauty, which will kind of wrap up our look at classic Disney. There were many reasons why we chose the movies that we chose for this month. Mostly because these were the movies that, when you think the classic Disney era, these are the ones that you think of. Snow White, Pinocchio, Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty. And the reason we're ending it with Sleeping Beauty is because this is kind of the end of that era in more ways than one. Walt would still be alive for a few more years. He would die in 66. But this was the last one where you had a passion project from Disney. This was the big, it doesn't matter how much it costs. All that matters is the art, the art form of animation. And that had a lot to do with the fact that Sleeping Beauty bombed at the box office. As beautiful as this movie is, as great as this movie is, it is a classic. Not a lot of people thought that way back in 59. It just, it just did not make the money. Not necessarily that it didn't make the money that a lot of people thought it would. It's just, this movie was so expensive, there was no way it would have made the money back. At the time, this was the most expensive animated movie ever made. And it wouldn't be until its second re-release in 79, I believe, that it actually made a profit.
Yeah, this one is incredibly artistic. In the most basic sense of that word, as in it looks like a piece of art.
And you said that pretty much for every movie we've done so this month, but this definitely would be, any frame of this movie could be seen as a beautiful painting on your wall.
Well, unlike the other ones, this one was specifically meant to look like a painting, specifically like French Renaissance era art. They studied a lot of these paintings that you would have, you know, so they went and studied like Botticelli and stuff, and tried to get that look, that very Renaissance landscape and portraiture kind of look, more so in the landscape than the portraiture. The figures still look very Disney animation, but the backgrounds look like Renaissance landscapes. And it, you can really tell, and also you can tell how many layers that there are in the art. Especially in the forest scenes near the beginning of the movie, you can tell that they have layered the image multiple times so that you don't just have the background painting and then the animation cell laid on top of it. You've got like a background painting and then you've got a cell with a background, and then you've got a cell with trees in front of the background, and then you've got a cell with the animals on it, and then you've got a cell with Sleeping Beauty herself on it, you know, and you can tell that there's dimension to it, that there wasn't just one layer.
And the amount of detail in every single frame of this movie, level of detail that they've never done before or since, like, the furthest thing in this movie still has detail, even though you can't see it.
Yeah, there are some parts where you're looking at like individual leaves in the artwork,
brickwork and the shape of the wood on the tree, the bark on the trees.
Yeah, very different from back in, say, Snow White, when it was sort of this impressionistic watercolor kind of sense.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting very detailed now and very labor intensive in the artwork, which I love. I mean, it's a very beautiful movie for the most part. I will say that some of the figures seem to suffer a bit. I think so much detail was put in the backgrounds that some of the actual characters suffered a bit. There are a few times, like when Sleeping Beauty opens her eyes at the end of the movie after the kiss.
Mm-hmm.
There is just something off about that shot. It almost seems like her face was animated separately from her head. You know, like they had painted her body but left the face blank, and then they just animated like eyes and lips on top of it. It doesn't quite move as a single unit.
Like the Snow White, Sleeping Beauty's body was like a background, and then the eyes were just animated on top of that.
Yeah, it almost feels like that. It was really jarring watching it on 4K, and it kind of took me out of the movie for a second, because it's supposed to be the great, like, you know, oh, Sleeping Beauty, she's awake again, yay, you know. But it just, like, her eyes pop open, and it's almost a horror image, because it's not as smooth as you would expect.
Yeah, and like I said, there's been so much put into the detail that it really made this movie impossible to get their money back, and it almost cost the studio to shut down completely. Since this movie did not, it bombed, basically. Everyone at Disney was pretty much saying, you know, let's shut down the animation studio. We have television. That was the new thing. We have Disneyland.
Yeah, who wants to go to a movie theater anymore? You've got a TV box in your home.
Yeah, we have Disneyland itself. Why would they watch the movies when they could see the characters in real life? The live action movies were starting to come from Disney, and it led to the Xerox method that we've talked about before. The next movie, 101 Dalmatians, after this, you can see the change. If you want to know more about that, go back to our 101 Dalmatians episode, and we talk more about the definite downgrade between Sleeping Beauty and 101 Dalmatians.
Yeah. The other thing is that we talk frequently about one movie doing poorly and then people just deciding an entire genre is done.
Yeah.
And that happened here in a big way. This movie didn't do what they expected it to do. And so instead of going, let's see what happened with this particular movie that caused it to underperform, they just decided fairy tale movies are over.
It would be 30 years before Disney would do another fairy tale movie, and that was The Little Mermaid.
Yeah, I mean, that's, we talked about that in our Waking Sleeping Beauty. That is why it has that title. This was the end of the Disney princess for 30 years.
Yeah, and I mentioned Disneyland, and Disneyland has Sleeping Beauty Castle. And when Disneyland opened in 1955, it had Sleeping Beauty Castle. And the reason it's called Sleeping Beauty's Castle, despite the fact it looks nothing like the one in the movie, it was advertising for the movie. A movie that wouldn't come out for another 4 years. Too bad that advertising didn't work in the movie's favor.
Yeah. I also think that there might be a little bit of generation turnover here.
Possible.
You know, granted, it's, you know, basically 20 years later, but that means that the kids that really fell in love with Disney in the Snow White kind of era, they now have kids of their own. And the question becomes, will the Disney magic roll over to a new generation?
And that was as we talked through the years, you know, there was that gap. There was that bit of a downgrade during the wartime era. And now here we are, just about 10 years after Cinderella, the big comeback of Disney. And that itself also kind of wanes off, even now. And, you know, people, we're reaching 10 years since Frozen came out. We're 10 years since Tangled came out. And there are people who are nostalgic for those movies who have no interest in the current movies that are coming out right now.
Yeah. And honestly, this was right at the beginning of when the baby boomer generation would be old enough to start going to movies. The children that were born just before the war have now aged out of this sort of thing. You know, the fairy tale princess kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the baby boomers are a little too young for it in a lot of ways. So we've got that big thing of there's going to be a big market in a couple of years. But I'm not sure there was such a big market at the moment this movie premiered.
Like I said, this movie would get a lot of praise 20 years from now in 79. So, and a lot of it had to do with the psychedelic era of the 70s, but I think it's just that generation of kids just, they embraced this movie where their parents didn't.
I hate to say it, but I think a lot of it also was the music.
Oh yeah, I do want to talk about the music. This entire score was based off Tchaikovsky's Sleeping Beauty ballet score.
And I'm not exactly sure ballet was where kids in 1959 were wanting to be.
Yeah, and we've mentioned this before with Babes in Toyland, how Disney was inspired by the original work, and then they rework it, they reorchestrate it, and write new lyrics to the songs to kind of make it their own. And it kind of worked in this case, especially with Once Upon a Dream.
But honestly, that's the one song from this film. Other than occasionally waking up with, like, Hail to the Princess Aurora! Like, there's the little drinking song.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to be putting Skumps on their list of favorite Disney songs.
Yeah, it's not really... So there's, like, the Princess Aurora song. There's Once Upon a Dream.
I wonder.
Yeah.
Maybe I wonder. That might count as an I Want song, barely.
Yeah, but it barely even counts as a song. It's really just mostly kind of a generic vocalization.
If anything, it's the intro to Once Upon a Dream.
Yeah, it's hard to kind of think of it as its own thing. We talked about how Cinderella had, like, 8 songs that you can't help but just know by heart. This one has 1. It's a good one. Don't get me wrong.
Multiple times in this movie.
Yeah, Once Upon a Dream is one of my favorite Disney songs of all time. It's another one that I randomly burst into it in my house. But it's the one song from this film.
Yeah, and it does take a little bit more from the ballet in that the princess's name is Aurora, which comes from the ballet. But it also takes the Brothers Grimm version where the princess's name, Briar Rose.
And interestingly, it's credited to the version by Charles Perrault, who's the same one that wrote the Cinderella version. So it's... the French version, but with the German name, but with the Russian ballet. So that kind of points to what I think is one of the main issues the film has, which is I'm not sure which version of this it really wanted to be.
I think it just wanted to be all of it. Put it into a mixing bowl and whatever comes out, comes out.
Yeah. We've kind of talked about it a little bit here, but do we want to kind of do our quick voice actor rundown? Most of these people we have talked about before.
Yeah, let's get to Mary Koska, Princess Aurora, which we've talked a little bit about last week, as she did end up having to sue Disney for unpaid royalties, much like our Cinderella actress last week.
Yeah, she was not really... she wasn't really a film actress. She was an opera singer. She did some Broadway.
Was still in high school when she did this movie. She was 19 when she did this movie.
Yeah. She had, prior to this, though, been on Edgar Bergen's radio show. You know, she sang with Martin and Lewis. She was really well known for her singing voice, but she wasn't really known as an actress outside of that. She was an opera singer, of course, so she was acting, you know, operatically, but not so much just an actress on her own.
To kind of bring back a story we made last week, Mary Koska had an issue in that she had a very thick Southern accent when she was actually talking. But they told her, do a British accent, and that's what we got.
You can't really tell.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's a perfectly serviceable Disney princess voice.
It's her doing this. I mean, whatever accent she is doing makes her sound like a generic American accent, so whatever she did worked.
Yeah. It's fine. Aurora's speaking voice is never going to be my top Disney princess performance.
I think more people will recognize the singing over the very few lines of dialogue she does have in this movie.
Yeah, she does not have a lot of just spoken, you know.
She sleeps more than she talks.
Yes, she does. Let's move on to what I believe is our first named Disney prince.
Prince Philip.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about whether or not Prince Charming should be considered his name, like his name was Charming.
Which is really weird considering Snow White considered her prince to be Charming.
Yeah, but this one we actually get a for real given name, Prince Philip.
There's a reason he's given the name Prince Philip.
Please go ahead with that.
In that Prince Philip was a famous name because of Elizabeth's husband.
Yeah, this would have been, I mean, they would have been married for a little while.
Less than a decade at this point.
Yeah, but what was it, 1956 or something that she ascended to the throne?
Yeah.
She wouldn't have been on the throne for too much longer, maybe 55. Yeah, her husband and her the images of her wedding and stuff, it wasn't televised, of course, but it was in newsreels and things, would have been one of the big news stories, of course, post-war.
Mm-hmm.
They were married in 47, so, you know, not too long post-war, and she would have ascended the throne in 52, I believe, so I was a little, you know, yeah. So, then as now, royal weddings still somehow capture the American imagination.
Yeah.
So we get our first named Disney prince, but he is played by Bill Shirley. He was a Broadway guy as well. Later went on to become a Broadway producer, even. He had film deals at 20th Century Fox, Columbia, Paramount during his career. Was in a lot of films kind of in the background. Interestingly, he was the dubbed over voice of one of the characters in My Fair Lady.
Hmm. Did not know that.
Yeah. He dubbed over the singing voice for Jeremy Brett, which is weird because Jeremy Brett could sing, and I'm not entirely sure why they dubbed over his voice, because he would later sing in other things, and he had an amazing voice. But if you've watched My Fair Lady, On the Street Where You Live is sung by the voice of Prince Philip in Sleeping Beauty. So, interesting little tidbit there. We have, of course, going into it, we have our great Disney villain. We have Eleanor Audley back from last week. She was Lady Tremaine in Cinderella, and now she is Maleficent in Sleeping Beauty, two of the great classic Disney villains.
Yeah, one of the few Disney classic Disney actors to voice more than one villain.
Yeah. We went over kind of her resume last week when we talked about that, so I won't dwell on that. Another one we've got coming back from last week is we have Verna Felton back. As Flora. You'll remember her from Cinderella as the fairy godmother. She's back as another fairy. The fairy.
Does she count as a fairy godmother? Do these three count as fairy godmothers? I would like to think so, but I don't know.
I think they would be.
They were at the christening.
Yeah. And they raised they raise her, so
yeah,
I don't see why not. Rounding out our fairies here, we have Barbara Jo Allen.
Fauna.
That is Fauna, yes. She did a couple of voices for Disney Animation. She would also appear in Goliath 2 and Sword in the Stone. Mostly, though, she was a TV actress and all. And she played a lot of like older unmarried women, spinster type characters, you know, aunts, things like that. So this is a bit of typecasting here as Fauna. It's that same kind of role. And we have Barbara Luddy.
Yes, as Meriwether.
As Meriwether, my favorite. My favorite of the fairies. We've talked about her before. She was Lady in Lady and the Tramp.
Mm.
And she showed up in 101 Dalmatians as Rover. Whenever we get to Winnie the Pooh, she was Kanga in Winnie the Pooh originally. So you know,
she's pretty much a Disney legend.
Yeah. So she is indeed as far as I know, she's never received the actual Disney legend status as far as the award. Seems a shame. She's in quite a lot of Disney things. So yeah, she was a vaudeville person, came to Hollywood, got some silent pictures, and then did several things for Disney, kind of Disney being her big thing that she's known for. We have our two kings here. Mm-hmm. We have Taylor Holmes as King Stefan, who is Aurora's father. He was a theater actor back at the in like 1900 turn of the century. He has a memorable role in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. He's the guy who might end up as the father-in-law to Marilyn Monroe, and she tells him like, "I don't want your son's money, I want your money," or something like that. Probably most people would remember him either for Gentlemen Prefer Blondes or Sleeping Beauty. And we have the great Bill Thompson back again. We have talked about him a lot. Voice of Droopy, Mr. Smee and Peter Pan, half of the dogs in Lady and the Tramp. You know, we've talked about him several times, so we don't really need to go back. I will say that Verna Felton shows up a second time as Queen Leah, who is Aurora's mother.
It feels weird that there actually is a royalty named Leia in the Disney canon.
Yeah. Love it. But yeah, a lot of repeat, you know, legendary Disney actors coming back for this one. So they were kind of hiring in studio by this point.
That's one way to keep costs low.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's all the voice actors in here. So I want to start talking about with the three fairies themselves. First off, their names, because apparently there was an original idea that they were going to each have a power over a force of nature. Flora having power over plants, Fauna having power over animals, and Meriwether having power over the weather. Obviously, that didn't happen in the final cut, but they kept the names, and they're actually nice names for those three.
Yeah. I like the fact also that Flora and Fauna seem, as names, mm-hmm. they're like, they go together. And then Meriwether is just kind of tacked on, which also fits the dynamic of the three.
Yeah, Meriwether is kind of seen as the also-ran of the three fairies.
Yeah.
Even though she has the most character of the three.
I absolutely adore Meriwether. She is just my favorite. She always has been. I love her so much.
The rivalry between Flora and Meriwether. Make it pink, make it blue, make it pink, make it blue.
And Meriwether is right. It should be blue.
There one scene where they actually hit the dress at the same time. It should have been purple.
I would have thought, but, you know, whatever. I have so many questions about the fairies.
It does answer some questions of how different fairies can be of different sizes, and they just change their size. Implying that Tinkerbell could do the same.
Well, I don't know. Tinkerbell doesn't use wand magic, though.
It's true.
As much. I mean, she does. There are times when she has a magic wand, but usually it's just flying around with fairy dust. But
could the fairy godmother turn into a fairy size? She also has a magic wand.
Well, she seems to. Here's the thing, is the small size seems to be a thing they do as a form of travel. They only really do it when they're traveling or that one time when they need to hide in the clock or whatever it is they're hiding in.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, we only ever see them in their tiny little fairy size when they need to fly distances.
Mm. I guess at full human size, their wings couldn't carry them.
Yeah, their wings do seem very small for the full human size. I mean, then again, it's magic, so it can do whatever you want. Here's the thing. Their magic is super inconsistent.
Yeah.
At the beginning, Meriwether says she wants to turn Maleficent into a toad. Or a hoppy frog, or whatever she calls
hop it. Hop-toad.
Hop-toad.
But like, they say you can't do that because Maleficent is too powerful.
Well, no. That's not the reason they give. She says, you know our magic doesn't work that way. We can only do things that are for good and happiness.
Because they are the good fairies.
They are the good fairies. So it would seem that their sphere of magic is not battle magic. It's not recrimination magic. It's not curses. It's not, you know. It's good and sweetness and light.
And then later they just put the magic on a sword and it flies.
Yeah, and then they're like, let's stab Maleficent with a sword that we magicked up. And also let's turn the raven into a stone. And let's, yeah.
Well, they had 16 years. Who knows what they were doing in those 16 years?
Not using magic. They specifically said.
Can you imagine being a magical being? They specifically refer to humans as mortals. So it's assuming that they are not mortal. So who knows how long 16 years would be to a non-mortal person. But they went and not used magic for 16 years and lived as mortals for 16 years. And they seemingly are not having fun with it.
Well, yeah, especially Meriwether. Meriwether's like, I did not sign up for this at all. Okay, I want to get into my favorite fan theory about this film.
Mm-hmm.
There is the question of why does Maleficent start something? What is Maleficent's deal?
She specifically says that she was not invited to the christening of baby Aurora.
Exactly. But here's the thing. Baby showers and christenings and the like are awful. Why would you be annoyed not to be invited?
She is still they refer to her as Excellency, so she might have some sort of rule in the fairy kingdom And as a ruler of the Fairy Kingdom, she would assumingly be invited because all the nobility that would be invited to such an event, especially a royal christening.
Stop answering my rhetorical questions, because then I can't answer them myself. but that is the thing, is that the king and queen specifically refer to all the fairies in this movie as Your Excellency. Mm-hmm. And while that is not necessarily a royal title, it would have been a title given to, like, ambassadors.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps heads of state that weren't royal. Mm-hmm. Like if there was a prime minister or something, you know, although this is what, the
14th century.
Yeah.
Specifically say the 14th century.
The 1300s. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's like maybe prime ministers weren't as much of a thing then. But, you know, depending on the area. Or high-ranking people in religious orders.
They do mention that Maleficent is a very powerful fairy. So she could just be of high rank.
Yeah, and she seems to have a domain.
Yeah.
They do talk about the, you know, mountain nobody goes to, or whatever they call it. Mm-hmm. The mountain of pure evil, or whatever. But they do talk about her, you know, the queen specifically refers to her as Your Excellency when she's addressing her. And there is a very infamous kind of Tumblr thread that goes around occasionally where a bunch of people discuss this.
We're not talking about the Angelina Jolie movie here, are we?
No. This is specifically to deal with this film. Let's forget about the other as much as we can. However, a bunch of people are wondering why Maleficent kind of loses her mind in this one. The entire thing comes down to the fact that a royal christening isn't like a baby shower today. Mm-hmm. A royal christening is like the social event. You know, it's a way to strengthen diplomatic ties.
They make a big deal about the two kings uniting their kingdoms.
Yeah, it's there to announce a formal betrothal, you know, and during the medieval times, this is when everyone who is everyone is going to be there. This is where deals are made. This is where alliances are forged. This is where gossip is swapped, you know. So for you to be excluded, if you are anyone of rank, and she specifically says, Maleficent says when she comes in, she says, oh, look, everyone is here. The royalty, the nobility, the gentry. So if she is of a higher rank and has dominion over some domain or kingdom or whatever, like, the gentry get invited, but not me? You know?
Yeah.
You are specifically hampering her ability to do business, basically. So this isn't just like we don't like her very much, let's invite her. This is a declaration of war, basically, on the king and queen's part.
Whether intentional or unintentional.
Yeah, and for Meriwether to state in front of everyone involved, you know, everyone there, that you weren't invited specifically. She's given the king and queen
an out.
Yeah. She's basically saying, like, oh, I'm sure it was some sort of oversight, you know, it got lost in the mail kind of thing. And maybe the king and queen would have been like, oh, you know, we sent a messenger. Did he not arrive? You know, they could have saved face at that point. But
Meriwether had to open her mouth.
Yeah, instead, Meriwether is like, no, you specifically weren't invited because nobody likes you, which is an even bigger insult. And then the king and queen don't dispute that. She's like,
they refer to her. Yeah, they're referred to her as a creature, as just an unwanted creature that is only brings, you know, destruction wherever she goes.
Yeah, and I mean, you wouldn't even do that in a modern setting. You know, you wouldn't like invite a foreign head of state over and then be like, look at this creature, you know?
Yeah.
And so there are multiple points where they insult and belittle someone of high rank and extreme power. And while I'm not saying Maleficent is right to be like, I'm going to murder your daughter over it, wars have been fought for much less. And so it was almost restrained for her to just say, I'm just going to take it out on your specific family line instead of murdering half the people in your kingdom.
True. I mean, she could have easily put the curse on Philip as well.
Well, she could have also just done, like, every third person in your kingdom will die. You know, it seems to a modern audience like, boy, this chick went nuts over nothing. But given the social standards of the time, that would have been a terrific insult.
Yeah, to put it in a modern setting, it would be like the president specifically not inviting a certain head of state to their annual gala. Specifically saying, you are not worthy enough to be in at my party.
Yeah. It's not like we haven't been through anything like that recently.
One thing I completely forgot until right now is another thing that added to the heavy price point of this movie was this was the first animated movie to be completely filmed in 70mm film.
Yeah. That too.
So, yeah, this was also the second Disney animated movie to be filmed in widescreen. The first was Lady and the Tramp. When you add the widescreen, when you add the fact that this was animated on 70mm film, it adds the cost up. And considering that the movies that came after that for a while was back to the old box screen, yeah, that a lot of money put in this movie.
Yeah.
One thing I do want to... The big question, what was Meriwether's gift going to be before Maleficent showed up? Nobody knows.
Yeah, we never did get to find out. I mean, it's like, good she was interrupted because she kind of started crap, but...
Yeah, they specifically say that the fairies can only give one gift, no more nor less. Flora gives her great beauty. Fauna gives her the gift of song. Who knows what Meriwether would have given her had Maleficent had been a few minutes late.
It would have been ironic if it was like the gift of great weaving or something, you know?
I don't know.
This is one thing I want to say as a person who does various fabric arts and stuff. Okay, imagine that you are a person who makes yarn and cloth for a living. You know, you've got this great spinning wheel, this invention. It's a machine that makes you very, very productive in your job, makes spinning so much faster. And then one day the queen insults a fairy and now all of the spinning wheels have to be burned. And now you have to go back to like a drop spindle and a distaff.
Your business is pretty much dead at that point.
Well, it's not dead. I mean, you know, there was spinning and stuff before spinning wheels, of course, but...
It makes your job harder.
Yeah, it's like it cuts your production down to like a third of what you can do with a spinning wheel.
Thanks, Meriwether.
Yeah, I've watched people spin with like one person on a spinning wheel and one person next to them on a drop spindle, and just you can't even compare the speed. Even the best people who can spin by hand can't match, you know, like a novice on a spinning wheel. It's insane. It would annoy me, you know, that for like 16 years fabric production would have been slowed to a trickle by comparison.
I would have put some hate on some fairies. Like, not just any, that one fairy in particular, I hate her. She called
Yeah, that little blue fairy.
That little short blue fairy.
Yeah. How dare she? The thing about it is, though, is that this entire movie is the fairies trying to clean up their own mistakes.
Yeah, the fairies do more than anyone else in this movie. It's really their movie.
Yeah, it's kind of like we talked about with Jiminy Cricket. Is that, like, really Pinocchio is the story of Jiminy Cricket. Sleeping Beauty is mostly the story of these three fairies who keep screwing up and having to fix it.
Yeah, so they take the baby, they kind of, and they take her into the forest and they raise her as their own. Yeah, without magic. No magic for 16 years. A magical being forced to live as a mortal.
We've never heard that one before.
Yeah. But it's the... Okay, so we fast forward 16 years. And it's the... These three want to do something special for their Briar Rose for her 16th birthday. Fauna wants to make a cake, and they specifically say that she's never made a cake before.
Well, no, she said she's never made a fancy cake. There's a difference.
Yeah, but she's putting the cake together and layering it and putting frosting and candles on, and she hasn't even baked it yet.
Yeah, and also she doesn't know what it means to fold eggs in, so I do question if she's made even basic cakes at that point.
Three different sized cups for flour.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they said that they've never made a fancy cake before. So I assume that Meriwether would be the chef. I know that's typecasting, but I would assume that Meriwether would be the chef of the three.
I think Meriwether gets all the icky jobs they don't want to do.
Hence how she ended up on cleanup duty while the other two is making a dress and making a cake.
Yeah.
Flora wants to make a dress, but she's never made a dress before. So each of them seems to want to do something special for Briar Rose Aurora that they've never done before because it's their last chance to do it before they give her back to the king.
Yeah, it's really weird that for a story that was originally set over the span of like 100 years.
Yeah.
Almost all of this movie takes place in the span of 24 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
We've got the opening that shows how Aurora gets cursed and, you know, that Maleficent is the villain and how she ends up in the woods with these three women. But the majority of the movie takes place between dawn on her birthday and dawn the next day.
Okay, I completely forgot about this, but I do have to backtrack. Young Prince Philip looking at baby Aurora for the first time and, like, completely questioning the whole thing.
Well, do you blame him? He looks like he's about 7 at the time. And
I was
going to
say 10, but...
I would say maybe a little older, a little younger. I think he's supposed to be 21 officially. It's a bit weird. I think he's supposed to be 21 and she's supposed to be 16, maybe.
So that will make him 5.
Yeah. So, I mean, he might be a little older, younger. But yeah, I wouldn't say 10. She is a infant, you know, like days or maybe months at most old. And, like, you're telling, like, a first grader, like, you're gonna marry this baby. You're gonna kiss this baby. And, like, at that point, you're still kind of in the, like, ew, I don't want to kiss anybody, you know, cooties. Yeah. And then it's like, you're gonna marry a baby, you know. It's like, I don't think child brains really eventually go, like, well, by the time we're in our 20s, that's gonna be no difference, really, you know.
I just love that look they have Philip give the baby. We never actually see the baby princess ever. We just see the cradle.
Maybe she was a really ugly baby. Maybe that's why the first gift is you're going to be beautiful. Maybe Flora is just like, wow, that is an ugly baby. My first gift will be great beauty.
okay, that would explain Philip's little look at the first scene of Aurora.
Yeah, maybe it's not the age difference. Maybe it's just that Aurora was a shockingly ugly baby.
But yeah,
we've all known one. All you people who are sitting there thinking like, but all babies are beautiful. No, you've known an ugly baby. There has been at least one baby in your life you've looked at it and gone like, ew.
So yeah, let's get back to the main stars of this movie, the fairies. They kick out Aurora saying, go pick some berries, take a long time. But, you know, they're still motherly. Like, don't talk to strangers. Don't go too far away from the house. But we need to kick you out of the house for a little bit. You think she suspected anything? No.
And then Aurora does what all Disney princesses do. She goes into the woods and she has a long conversation with animals.
We've had this conversation for the last couple of weeks. It's like, that's the big lie about Disney princesses. It's not the prince. It's the fact that you can have conversations with animals.
Yeah, I think if you go out into the woods and you find yourself communicating with animals and they come and do tasks for you and dance with you and stuff, you are in fact a Disney princess. Doesn't matter if there's a prince anywhere nearby.
She talks about having this dream about meeting a handsome prince. And apparently that's the cue for the animals to steal Prince Philip's clothes and start dancing with Aurora.
Yeah. And this is easily one of the best scenes in the movie. It is, you know, them putting the cape on the owl and the bunnies in the boots, and they do the whole dance sequence. The song is the best song in the movie and the only one you remember. It's a great scene.
And what led up to it is kind of funny as well, because you have Philip, he's obviously in the kingdom for Aurora's birthday, obviously, because they are betrothed, and he hears Aurora singing in the forest, and he wants to know, where is the singing coming from? Having to pretty much bribe his horse to go there. I'll give you some extra oats and a couple of carrots. Good Prince Philip there. Always taking care of his horse.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that I don't think the horse was supposed to be a character. The actor, Bill Shirley, during one of the rehearsals / live model sessions that they would do for the animators, he actually mimicked getting off of a horse and said, "Whoa, Samson!" And they were like, well, I guess we have to draw a horse now named Samson.
The little excitement of poor Samson getting to the song and to the point where Philip falls off and falls into the river. No carrots.
Yeah. I feel so bad for Samson. He's such a good horse otherwise.
We had Prince Eric and his dog, and now we have Prince Philip and his horse.
Yeah. I think Samson is the early version of Maximus in Tangled. Very similar energy.
Yeah.
This is absolutely, much like Snow White, the ultimate Disney trope of I have known you for 5 seconds and now we are desperately in love.
Yeah.
I don't know your name. We danced once.
We sang a song.
Therefore, we are meant to be together.
Again, how many times have we seen that? We've seen that with Snow White. We've seen that with Cinderella. Here's Sleeping Beauty. It's just the trope of falling in love at first sight. Disney really loves the love at first sight trope.
Yeah. And, you know, even though Aurora at this point in time does not know she's a princess and does not know she is betrothed, Philip does.
Yes, Philip knows that he is betrothed. He is betrothed to the Princess Aurora. But he hasn't seen Aurora since she was an infant. All he knows is that this, what he believes to be a peasant girl, is exceptionally beautiful, has this beautiful voice, and he is totally infatuated with her.
Yeah, I mean, they're both kind of adults at this point, you know?
Well, they haven't seen each other in 16 years, and he hasn't seen her since she was a baby, and she doesn't even remember anything.
Yeah. You can kind of give Aurora a pass because this is literally the first man she's ever met in her entire life. So you can kind of forgive her for being like, this is the first man I've ever seen. And also, he is super handsome and has a good voice and danced with me. This must be love, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get it. She's naive. But you would expect better from Prince Philip, who has been in the world for these last 16 years and should know better.
Maybe he just, you know, again, he doesn't know about Aurora. He doesn't know that this girl's Aurora. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So let's go back to the fairies and how they screw everything up.
They decided, hey, you know what? Cooking is hard. Sewing is hard. Let's just use magic.
Cleaning is hard.
Cleaning is hard, yes.
We got to do the Fantasia Sorcerer's Apprentice mops, you know, dancing around kind of thing.
Disney, Walt is going to get that scene over one way or another.
Yeah. And they get it to...
I do love the joke of Fauna not even knowing how to read a cookbook. Tisp. What's a tisp? Which Meriwether goes, teaspoon!
Yeah.
Which makes and me I believe... Also... Which makes me believe Meriwether is the cook of the trio.
Yeah, I can believe that, but or maybe just the smartest of the three. Yeah. But I love that when they finally decide to use magic, she enchants the ingredients and then tells them to read the cookbook. She doesn't just use to levitate things or to magic a cake out of thin air. She specifically gives some form of sentience to, like, the flour and the eggs and stuff, and is like, here, read this cookbook and do what it says.
Here, eggs, break yourselves open, pour your innards out. Here, flour
bowl. And then go into
here,
the
flour
oven.
Bag, open yourself and pour your innards out.
Yeah, it's a little disturbing. But, of course, the thing that gets them in trouble is that Flora makes the gown, and Meriwether says it should be blue. Flora wants it to be pink. They fight over it, and that magic escapes the house and alerts Diablo the Raven.
Never given the name in the movie, but yes, he is called Diablo. If you had a raven, you would name it Diablo.
No, I can think of several names I would name a raven before Diablo, actually.
Well, if you're an evil fairy... Why not?
Okay, well, I'm not a fairy, so there you got me there.
Like I said before, you know, I'm surprised when they both hit the dress with the red and blue, with the pink and blue magic, that the dress didn't turn purple.
Yeah, I mean that would have been the thing, you know.
Like, and they still would have hated it because it wouldn't have been pink or blue.
The interesting thing is though is that the idea of doing a gown in two different colors, like one side one color and one side, is a medieval idea. So I don't know why they didn't just go, we'll do half of it blue and half of it pink.
That's sharing. Neither one wants to share. And the fact that it took until 2020 for Disney to actually make that a thing with Aurora.
What?
The pink and blue dress. For as long as Aurora has been a character in the park, she's always worn the pink dress. It's not until the early 2020 when they did the Magic Happens parade that they actually gave her a dress that, depending on which way the light hits it, will be either pink or blue.
Oh, wow. I've always hated that they've given her the pink dress in the official thing, because she spends most of the movie in the blue dress.
Well, Cinderella wears the blue dress, so you have to have her wear the pink dress.
Yeah, and I get why they would do it for branding purposes, but I really hate it because the blue dress is pretty, and it's always, Sleeping Beauty was always my favorite, Aurora was always my favorite of the classic Disney princesses, but she's always wearing the pink dress, and I just did not want Aurora in the pink dress, but there's never any merchandise for her in the blue dress. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Make a blue variant, please. I swear nobody will mistake her for Cinderella. They're completely different styling. Come on.
I don't know. I've seen people who can't tell the difference between Cinderella and Elsa.
Are they Disney fans, though?
Eh.
I don't think... I'm going to know true Scotsman on this one. I don't think any true Disney fan would...
So yeah, Aurora finally comes home and she says, hey, I just met a guy. Oh no, you can't meet a guy. You're betrothed. You have to marry Prince Philip and you're really Princess Aurora. And we've been lying to you for 16 years.
Once again, the fairies absolutely screw this one up because...
The magic fight got the attention of Diablo. He flies in and overhears him saying, you are Princess Aurora and you are going to the castle tonight.
Well, that too. But I was going to say they screwed it up in relation to Aurora herself. Because you have known for 16 years that on the day of her birthday, you are going to have to deliver her to the castle at sunset. This has been a plan for 16 years, women. Okay? And instead, they spend the entire day making a cake and making a dress and they have never once sat her down and broken it to her.
I think it's a situation of they couldn't because she could tell someone and they make it clear that Maleficent has cronies everywhere and any one of them could have asked her who she was. Luckily for them, they're idiots who think she's still a baby.
Well, yeah, that's true. Here's a fun thing about the rewatch. I had completely forgotten that Maleficent had goons.
Her little pig-faced goons?
Yeah, her little pig goons. I had completely wiped them from my memory. I was sitting there and I was like, now who are these characters? But no, I wasn't talking about, like, preparing her beforehand, although, you know, that might have been smart, and there are ways to do it where, you know, you're not really our daughter, you know. One day you might meet your real parents, you know. You don't necessarily have to tell her all about who she is, but, you know, at least lay the groundwork. But I meant making a dress and baking a cake are things that can be done ahead of time. And it would have been fine to wake up that morning and be like, happy birthday, here's your cake, here's your pretty dress. Now, for the rest of the day, we are going to tell you the story of how you ended up living with us. You know, as long as you don't let her out of your sight between then and sunset, not too much. But instead, they're like, oh, please, go forth and frolic in the woods alone.
They're not very good parents, apparently.
Well, they're just not good at anything.
They're not good at being human because they're not human. They're fairies.
Well, they're not good at being fairies either because, like I said, you know, they kind of started this.
Yeah.
We don't want you here, Maleficent. And then it's like, well, we can't undo the curse, but
we can alter the curse.
Alter it a little bit. Okay, she's not going to die. She's going to fall asleep. Then they get, you know, they can't wait 12 more hours to use their magic. They mess up telling her who she is. Later on in the movie, they mess up several other times. You know, it's like, you're killing me here, fairies. But as they're preparing this, Philip goes back to her, to his father, and he's like, hey, I'm going to marry a peasant girl, even though today is the day I'm supposed to meet my betrothed again. Like, Philip's not very bright either. It's like, I do like
a little bit of, for lack of a better term, modernization, especially for 1959. Dad, it's the 14th century. We don't have to follow those old rules anymore.
Yeah.
It's a bit of the modernization, like, you know, everyone said, hey, it's 2020. We don't have to live like that anymore. It's something that it's kind of done to this day.
By the way, why don't you go look up how the real Prince Philip has treated his children in relation to their marriages, and maybe you'll realize we're still doing that to this day.
And I do like the King Hubert is like, "You're gonna give up the throne for a peasant girl you just met."
Again, the entire reason we have the real Prince Philip.
So the entire scene is stolen by the minstrel getting drunk.
Yeah, it's a good little bit of comic relief that doesn't have to do with the fairies. Most of the comic relief in the movie has to do with the fairies fighting. But then all of a sudden we get this random minstrel servant guy figuring out a way to sneak the celebratory wine away from the
king has had for 16 years for this very moment.
Yeah. And I love how much King Hubert is just like, the second that the two of them show up tonight, they're getting married. I've built them a castle. I want grandchildren tomorrow.
I don't think that's how it works, sir. But yeah, he's going to make it happen.
Him and the king from Cinderella would get along very well. They're both baby crazy.
And Stefan is like, I haven't seen my daughter in 16 years. Can I have one night where I get to know my daughter?
Yeah.
And, you know, they make it work. It's like, hey, you're my old friend. You're my best friend since we were young. I'm. They specifically say that these two kings are lifelong friends. So who knows how long they've really known each other. Although Hubert looks a little bit older with the gray hair.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, it's implied that these two have known each other for a very long time. And this has been their plan to unite their kingdoms. Stefan has a problem with the fact that the royal wedding house is on Herbert's land rather than his own.
Yeah. I mean, but, it's fair. He should have been consulted.
But he gets to make the baby cribs, so it's all good.
Yeah. Although, you know, the status of women was always lesser, so it's really whatever Philip wants, probably.
We don't even see Leia until, like, the end of this movie. She has no... Granted, yes, women don't have that kind of role, but she's still the queen.
Yeah. They've got Aurora back at the castle. It's almost sunset. But, of course, the fairies screw up again, and they leave her alone so she can cry over her peasant boy that she's never going to be able to see again now because she has to go marry a prince. And, of course, Maleficent is like, good, you're alone. Here's a glowing orb. Why don't you follow it?
Here's a secret passage that nobody knows about.
Yeah. The fairies realize just in time to miss her. Because, again, these three. Ugh, what am I going to do with these three? But yeah. they go chasing after her, but before they can get to her, of course, Maleficent talks Aurora into touching the spindle, and she falls asleep as the sun sets.
That emphatic voice, the same voice she gave to Lady Tremaine, like, there's the curtains. Clean them.
Do them again. Yeah.
Yeah. And she hit that same emphatic.
Touch the spindle. Yeah.
Touch it.
But sadly, Aurora.
And it's like, why did we leave her alone? Like, wow, why did you leave her alone?
Yeah, it's like you had one job.
You had one job, fairies. One job.
Never leave this child alone for the next 16 years. You had like 20 minutes to go. What is wrong with you? But Aurora's asleep, and the fairies are like, uh-oh, how are we going to break it to the king? Wait, I know, we won't. We'll just put everyone asleep, and then they can't yell at us.
As fireworks are going off in the kingdom, yay, the princess is on her way, yay!
And then everybody goes to sleep.
And we get the title song, Sleeping Beauty, which is a very forgettable song.
I mean, if you need a lullaby, it will put you to sleep. I started nodding off during it.
And as the people are falling asleep, we hear King Hubert saying, Philip fell in love with a peasant girl. Poor Falk, like, what's her name? Where did they meet? Where did they meet? Once Upon a Dream.
Yeah.
Well, luckily those two were able to sing that song, otherwise we wouldn't know what's going on.
Indeed. But now they realize, like, oh wait, Philip has gone to the cabin in the woods or whatever.
Yeah. The peasant boy was Prince Philip the whole time.
And fortunately he's not there, so he's not asleep.
Yeah.
So the day can still be saved, except that Maleficent also found out about this somehow and is there waiting for him.
Well, he didn't know that it was going to be Prince Philip. All he knows what Diablo told her, which was Aurora fell in love with a boy. He's going to come by the house later. So if we stay here, we'll get the quote true love and we'll kidnap him and then she'll sleep forever.
Yeah.
Because even Maleficent is surprised that she was expecting a peasant boy and here is the prince of the neighboring kingdom.
Yep. Yay, we get a twofer. But she locks him up in her dungeon and she tells him that she is going to keep him there until he is extremely old and then she's going to let him go wake Sleeping Beauty, who will still be 16 and they will never ever be together because age.
Well, she says this is where we get the 100 years from the original story. She plans to keep him for 100 years. And she straight up tells him, hey, that peasant girl you like is actually Princess Aurora, the girl you're supposed to marry anyway. So it all works out for you.
Except it won't, because I'm going to keep you locked up here until you are very old.
I do like the sarcastic way she's saying, true love conquers all. Hail the conquering hero.
Yeah. She's probably annoyed, as I think we all were, that the movie actually has a true love conquers all in the, like, literally in those words in the song.
This is the part where it's very confusing on what will bring Sleeping Beauty back to life. Is it love's first kiss or is it true love's kiss? Because those are two different things.
Yeah. I mean, fortunately for Aurora, these are the same thing.
Yes. Meriwether specifically says true love's kiss, which means she must be kissed by her true love. Love first kiss means as long as the two people are in love, the kiss will work. Doesn't have to be true love, it just has to be love.
Yeah. Who knows?
Though it is a little animation error as Philip is carrying the shield that he hasn't gotten yet.
Yeah.
When he walks out. So he hasn't gotten that shield yet.
Yeah, they give him a magical sword and shield. And Maleficent... This is the part of the movie you remember. Much like when we talked about Home Alone, the last 20 minutes or so of this movie are the entire movie that you remember. As they're escaping, Maleficent decides that she's going to put thorns around the castle, which is also from the original story, except it was that the thorns had kind of grown up over 100 years. But we can't have that since she's only been asleep for like an hour at this point. So,
and I do like that the fairies use their good magic to transform all of the dangers in Philip's way into nice things. Arrows turns into flowers. There's, you know, boulders turns into bubbles. A rainbow protects them from the boiling oil.
Yeah.
And then they turn Diablo into stone.
Yeah, I still don't get how that's the sweetness and light version, but you know.
Meriwether, don't tick off Meriwether. She will end you.
Yeah, I guess. I guess Meriwether really could have turned somebody into a toad if she wanted to.
And the look on Maleficent's face, like, oh no. My pet. My baby. Yeah. And that is when she decides to, all right, no more Miss Nice Girl.
Yeah.
You killed my bird.
I mean, it would get me. But, you know, we've got the thorns. And all but Philip
luckily
has
he had
the
a sword.
Sword.
Yeah, luckily he had a sword to break through the thorns.
I don't know why Maleficent didn't just surround the castle with something that, like, a sword couldn't defeat, like acid fog or something. But, you know, he makes it through the thorns and he's heading there, and Maleficent finally does the ultimate kind of nuclear option, is like, nope, dragon form.
The thing about this, it's Maleficent's trademark line, and I'm sad that they never used it in the Angelina Jolie movie. But the problem is, because it's a sort of swear, she cannot say this line in the parks.
Now shall you deal with me, O prince, and all the powers of hell!
She can't say hell in Disney, in the Disney parks. That's the problem.
How silly.
Now, they have gotten around this. They have gotten around this. In Fantasmic, which Maleficent is one of the main villains, she says,
now you will deal with me and all the powers of my imagination!
But Maleficent dragon form has got to be the greatest villain move in classic Disney.
And that is so iconic in itself. Like I said, in Fantasmic, you get the big visions, the look. There we go. That's the word I'm looking for, of the dragon. In Magic Kingdom, Disney World, there is the big parade float, which is a steampunk version of the Maleficent dragon.
I think you can get a inflatable version for your lawn of the Maleficent dragon for Halloween, can't you?
If not, you should.
I think I've seen that before. Maybe it was a somebody's wish fulfillment drawing or something. But
that dragon is so iconic in Disney, and it's just, that is Maleficent's ultimate form. It works. The problem is that, much like the fairies turning themselves mortal to raise Briar Rose, Maleficent has to become mortal to become a dragon.
Yeah.
So she can be killed. And is killed. Now, granted, the fairies never directly hit Maleficent. They just enchant the dragon to say, hey, could you kill the evil dragon, please? And it does so.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what they enchant the sword with. Maybe it's the power of, like, flight or something, you know, I don't know. He
they
just sort of
aim
throws
true.
The
so it's, I think it's more of giving Philip perfect aim rather than just making the sword.
Yeah. But the sword is also magic, and supposedly they could only do magic that was happy and... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, swords make me happy, but I don't know.
Like you were talking about the original story doesn't really have a villain, per se. Like, you needed a climax for this movie, and the original story doesn't have this climax.
Yeah, a guy hacking away at a field of thorns isn't really climactic that much. But, you know, Maleficent, one of the few Disney villains that gets kind of a double death, because being stabbed in the heart probably is what killed her, but the fall didn't help.
Yeah, and as does she actually turn back into her fairy form? Because there's this, her robes are shown on the ground with the sword through them.
Yeah, we don't actually see the body. Because it's Disney, you never see the body. But
you did see the sword go into her
chest, yeah.
Her chest, or her, what I would assume, her liver area. Her underbelly area, yeah. And there's blood. Actual blood. Yeah. And not different color blood. It's red blood. For a Disney movie, that is a lot.
That is true. But, you know, the evil is defeated, the thorns melt away, and Philip just kind of wanders through up to where Aurora is there and gives her the kiss. And then everybody wakes up, and Philip and Aurora are just standing there like, we're in love, we're going to get married, it all worked out.
Yeah, and you hear the king try to continue their conversation. It's like, what were you saying, Herbert? Oh, yeah, my son met a peasant girl, and oh, wait, there she is right now.
Yeah.
And Herbert is just so confused. It's, what is going on? What does this mean? No one is giving him any kind of explanation. So he just throws his hands up saying, sure, why not?
You know what? It worked out the way I wanted to anyway. I'm not going to ask questions.
As they are dancing to the original ballet version of What's Upon a Dream.
Yeah, and of course we end with the iconic Flora and Meriwether pink and blue argument as they change the gown's color as Aurora dances.
Yeah, that's Sleeping Beauty. That is this beautiful looking movie. Again, the 4K restoration on this movie is beautiful.
It is very nice, yes. Well, let's get to the big question. I'm going to ask you first. What do you think? Magic? No magic.
I'm going to say yes, but the main character doesn't do much in her own movie.
Yeah, I said last week that this was my favorite of the classic films when I was a kid. I'm not sure I can still say that after a rewatch.
Has Cinderella overtaken, like you were mentioning last week?
Yeah, I said with Cinderella, like, it did not feel like there was a moment that was wasted. Everything in that movie felt, you know, tight and fitted, joined together very specifically to create a cohesive story. This one kind of felt like a throwback to Snow White, where it was like, you know, 2 pounds of plot in a 10-pound bag. It just...
Maybe that's why this movie didn't do so well the first time around.
Yeah, I think I liked it most as a kid because the villain was more awesome and flashy than the villain in Cinderella.
Mm. Even though it's the same voice actress.
Even though it's the same voice actress. But I mean, Lady Tremaine can't turn into a dragon.
She could if she had the magic wand.
Yeah, probably. Also that outfit. I mean, that Maleficent outfit is just so iconic.
And as you say, everything villainous is lime. Her skin is green.
Yeah, she, you know, her magic is that specific lime color that we've come to associate with Disney villains.
Mm-hmm.
As well. And her skin does have that kind of pale greenish tone to it. She's got the really cool raven, you know, mm-hmm. which is better than a lazy cat, you know. let's just say that. But I think that my love of this film was entirely because Maleficent is awesome.
Maleficent is one of the great Disney villains, even to this, like I said before. She's an iconic villain, one of the main villains in the parks, used in all these stage shows. There was a reason they made a movie all about her. Wasn't all that great, but they made a movie all about her.
Well, they actually made two movies and nobody saw the second one.
Yeah.
Even I didn't see the second one, and I love Maleficent. So, I'm going to have to say that there is still Disney magic, but most of it is Maleficent and Meriwether.
Yeah.
Everything else is kind of... it didn't hold up as much as I thought it would, and that hurts me deep, deep in my soul.
If Maleficent had been about the deal between Maleficent and Meriwether, it probably would have been a better movie.
Yeah, if it had been like, there is some beef between these two fairies that, like, a royal family accidentally got caught up in, that would have been amazing.
You could still have Angelina Jolie in it, but it's just...
Yeah, you know. Angelina Jolie actually made a fine Maleficent for what it was worth, but, you know, it just wasn't a very well-written Maleficent.
Maleficent was Disney's attempt to do Wicked, and you cannot convince me otherwise.
Oh, yeah, I don't think that there's any doubt about that. Anyway. I would say that it's good for a rewatch, but it's... It's not one of Disney's best, sadly. I think that Cinderella has overtaken it for me personally. Cinderella was just such a beautifully done film. But I still want Blue Dress Aurora.
This movie, Sleeping Beauty, still looks awesome. Still looks beautiful. The backgrounds are beautiful. I still say it has Disney magic, but you're right. There's not enough story in here for it to be as well remembered as maybe it should be. It still should be remembered. It's just to be amazing, but there's not a lot of story here.
Yeah. And
more about the fairies. There's more, you know, the fairies do more. Prince Philip does more. The minstrel does more.
Yeah, the minstrel has, like, almost a better story arc than Aurora herself.
And all he wanted to do was get drunk.
Yeah. I mean, I can respect it. No.
Yeah, and I think that's all we can say about Sleeping Beauty. If you have a different opinion, we would like to hear your opinion on Sleeping Beauty. We are always welcome to others' opinions.
Yeah. Let us know if you think we missed something massively important.
And it says a lot that, like, Cinderella got two sequels and they've never made any for Sleeping Beauty.
I mean, how really? They could barely make the original story of Sleeping Beauty into a film. I don't really think I blame Disney so much, because honestly, the story of Sleeping Beauty, there's also not much there.
It's five paragraphs.
Yeah, it's you know, she gets cursed as a baby. She falls under the curse. 100 years pass. A guy comes along and goes like, "Hey, I can probably claim that princess."
Although the original way she wakes up is kind of horrifying.
Yeah.
It wasn't love's first kiss that woke her up. I'll leave it at that.
So, you know, we're...
Yeah, let's move on to next week. We're kind of getting back on our old schedule here, because a few weeks ago we had our good friend Insane Ian on the show, and he made a request, and we are going to fulfill that request, which is going to be The Black Cauldron, which is kind of seen as a black sheep on Disney animation. But we've decided to take this opportunity. You see, for the last few weeks, we have been talking about Disney princesses. And I think we've pretty much covered almost all of the official Disney princesses. But there's some Disney princesses that do deserve to have some love for them that aren't part of the official Disney princess canon. So we're going to dedicate the month of February, the month of love, to the unsung Disney princesses. And we are going to start with the Black Cauldron. So if there's a unsung Disney princess that you probably like, we'll probably talk about it in the next few weeks. So stay tuned for that. That's all for Sleeping Beauty. We will talk about the Black Cauldron next week. Still staying in this medieval era.
Yeah, we like the medieval era.
Yeah. And tune in next week for The Black Cauldron, and we will talk to you all next time. Bye!
Bye! Don't let the magic stop here.
Join our conversation online on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic.
Twitter at Rewatch the Magic.
And of course, new episodes every week at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com.
Remember, the magic is for everyone.
It only stops if you let it.